see the earth as it truly is, small and blue and beautiful in that eternal silence where it floats, is to see ourselves as riders on the earth together, brothers on that bright loveliness in that eternal cold, brothers who know now they are truly brothers. You are listening to Western Worlds. Here on Western Worlds, an AFM original show heard right here on astronomy.fm. My name is Professor Dave, and I'm coming to you this week, as every week, from the Center for Planetary Science and Exploration at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada. Our opening quote was from Archibald MacLeish's poem, Riders on Earth Together, Brothers in Eternal Cold, from Christmas Day 1968's New York Times. Our music today is our new regular weekly theme, Heliosheath, by Sean Kim. Today we'll be discussing space policy, a topic that informs what missions we must undertake in our exploration of the universe, as well as how we will explore. What tasks require large, expensive missions, and what tasks can be smaller and achieved more quickly. These small missions, in particular, can bring together interested people from very diverse backgrounds. Bringing people together has always been part of the power of space exploration, and as we will learn today, highly international cooperation is an essential part of our future in space. To tell us a little bit about the future of space exploration, the requirement of international cooperation, and the field of space policy, our guest today is Dr. Pascal Ehrenfreund, who has an extensive background in space policy and exploration, and many interesting ongoing projects. Enjoy the interview by myself, Professor Dave. Welcome, Dr. Ehrenfreund, to Western Worlds. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
To begin with, how about you tell us a little bit about what you're working on these days?
So I am a research professor of space policy and international affairs in the Space Policy Institute of the George Washington University in Washington, D.C. But I'm also still a professor of astrobiology at Leiden University in the Netherlands. So I'm actually pursuing space policy topics, but I'm still doing active research as well. I'm also the project scientist of a CubeSat currently in orbit, a CubeSat which has been built by NASA Ames with the name of Orioles. And I work in preparation for several Mars missions and also on upcoming cometary sampling missions. And I have experiments on the International Space Station, some of them which just returned, some of them which are in preparation to head to the International Space Station 2014, 2015, hopefully. And I'm very also interested in ground-based and analog research in preparation for space exploration.
So you're keeping busy.
Yeah, somehow.
Sounds like a lot of exciting stuff.
Yeah.
To begin with, you're working in space policy. Why do you think it's so important that humanity keep going to space and keep an eye on space?
First of all, I think at the moment we are still mainly in the robotic phase, and it is very important to explore all the different bodies. And actually worldwide, there's still a very active program in this decade, having many missions from the United States, Europe, Russia, Japan, and also the newcomers and really strong nations like China and India, which are preparing, you know, to explore Mars, Moon, and also objects beyond. And it gives us an information about our solar system. It gives us more knowledge about the origin of our solar system and also perspectives how other extrasolar systems have been formed, since we know now that we have more than 700 exoplanets and that the process of our own solar system is something which is occurring ubiquitously in the universe. It is important that we keep going for human exploration. I think we have to focus focus on the region where humans can go in that sense. And that is, at the moment, apart from the space station, only the moon, eventually nearest asteroid, but in particular Mars. And there is a lot to do, which we could do with human, which would be an improvement over robotic exploration.
What sort of things would we need to send per?
It's determined by orbital dynamics in our solar system, but all the objects like the Earth and Mars, Venus and Moon, and of course all the others, but that's important for understanding the origin of life. Our neighborhood, they have been seeded by a lot of material and also volatiles, not only refractory carbon material and also volatiles like water. And we would really like to understand more about the quantities and also the composition of material which has been transported to the early Earth.
And of course, that's something that we can't look for on Earth because Earth is so heavily altered since the early days.
We have only a very, very, very few spots on Earth where we find old rocks, and results then are mostly heavily debated.
because it's been colonized by various life forms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And of course, the other big reason to send a person to another planet is we get the pride saying we've sent a person to another planet.
Yeah, I'm a scientist and from the heart, and though I am doing policy, I still do believe that science should be the main driver for everything what we are doing, or it should at least guide commercial and other endeavors, including human exploration. It is important that we answer the question, why do we want to go there? And scientists can definitely answer this question best.
There's a big role in science to drive this sort of activity, but you also mentioned commercial activities. Mm-hmm. So what do you think is the place of the commercial?
I think the federal government has absolutely restrictions for funding, and it will not improve in the next decade. And that cannot speak for China, but for all other large space powers, I think it will be more situation of sustaining what has been invested and what is in the planning now. And there will be not large endeavors or infrastructures which can be planned in the current economic situation. So I would imagine that we would have to find an economically sustainable situation in order to have really large endeavors funded or pursued by the commercial industry. And they have some ideas. There is no real market yet in that sense, large market for, you know, having a humans going out and colonizing Mars, but there are ideas and they could be fruitful. So I do believe that really large endeavors like making a human settlement for a long term somewhere far away from our own home planet would really require the cooperation of many different stakeholders, and in particular the commercial sectors. It will never happen under federal, under government funding alone with scientists. There will be many stakeholders which are required in order to cooperate to make such things happen.
So in terms of cooperation, is that why it's so important that many countries work together?
Yeah, it is in generally, in particular, we have seen a lot of ambitious plans many years ago before the economic recession, which started approximately the end of 2008. There have been many plans out there and very little has materialized since then because governments and nations are just busy with fixing their economy. So there is not enough funding available. And so we can only work together and try to align budgets in order to make large endeavors happen. And there are a lot of ideas and discussions and activities from international working groups which try to improve the cooperation, try to have ideas and technology roadmaps, science roadmaps, how could we do large endeavors together. Of course, there are difficulties with aligning budgetary cycles politically, economically, but I think the discussion is ongoing and we will hopefully achieve in a few years an agreement how we can, for instance, do an international sample return mission, since that seems very, very difficult for one nation alone.
What do you think are the most important missions that we should really concentrate on if we have to only choose a few?
You mean large-scale missions?
Yeah.
Or because, as we discussed before, you have a lot of small robotic missions, which are all, I think, vital in order to further our understanding about the solar system, and that includes many nations in Japan and China and India have plans for this decade. So I think this is ongoing and should be supported. And if people exchange instruments on those missions, that would be already a step forward to work on. And many of them are actually in cooperation already, or people exchange instruments. So that's a very good example how to go in the future. If you really are thinking of a Mars sample return mission, of going back with humans to the moon and eventually explore in detail near-Earth asteroid objects, then I think you really have to try to exploit worldwide expertise and try to work together. I think that these are the returning with humans to the moon, bringing back samples. I think that it's something which we should do in the future and in 2020 and above, and exploit all the data which have been taken robotically until then. That, I think, is an important endeavor. I do believe that even for mission settlements and outposts on Mars, that will take a long time, but international cooperation is absolutely crucial, and the commercial sector, which will probably lead such an endeavor, which will have to work on an international basis.
But the commercial sector would not necessarily be terribly interested in doing science all the time, and yet some of that science would be required to really do the commercial endeavors.
We have to first, and I think there's a little bit of bias, because in order to make it actually work to go there, you need so much science and technology, so that this already furthers a lot of things in science. You know, you have to develop a spacesuit, you have to develop planetary protection standards, you have to develop an incredible amount of technology. So there is a big spur of science and technology if you actually ramp up for such an endeavor.
And a lot of that benefits Earth, too.
And obviously that, you always, and also if you prepare and you test in Earth analog environments, you learn very much about your own planet, obviously. That's really important. Also, I think we have to make sure that if you have such an endeavor which is led by the commercial sector, that you still keep in mind that you should do research when you are there, and not only fun. And if you have a human outpost, you know, you have to research every day. Everything what you do in order to survive there and in order to fix problems and in order to adapt is actually based on scientific principles. So it is actually science what you do if you go there. Yeah. You know, you're not going to sit there and play computer games. It's an incredible endeavor in order to survive. So I would consider that really as a scientific endeavor and exploration.
It would never just be casual tourism.
No, it is not casual tourism. And obviously you have ideas of space tourism, parabolic flights, which are really short. Yeah, as a scientist, I would think all those people which pay this incredible money, you know, $200,000 or so, they could take a little experiment with them. They could be proud of that and further science. That would be actually quite a good idea.
So in terms of the smaller missions, then, you're working on CubeSats, right?
Yeah, I think smaller missions are important. And in particular, we have a lot of actors, small countries, developing countries, and emerging space nations which do not have the means in order to contribute substantial hardware or technology to larger space missions, but they want to play and they want to be involved. And there is a lot of initiatives, and in particular from the United Nations, to involve developing countries and foster their capacity in contributing to later larger missions. And this kind of small satellites are an ideal basis for doing that, because actually CubeSat technology comes from the university, spreads out from university activities, and has been developed by students in particular. Although now you have really very capable science satellites for all kinds of different science topics developed, so it's an exploding field. And I think it is very important to have these kind of small missions, CubeSats, CubeBots, and also smaller missions, to involve all the different countries in building a bigger base of space nations, because they can make more pressure on political organizations in order to act like a bottom-up structure, support structure, to make space interesting. And I do believe the more people are involved, the more there is public awareness about space missions, and more that young people are enthusiastic, that will actually further sustainability for space exploration, which otherwise will, I think, be hampered by all the other problems which we have to solve on Earth. So you really have to keep going to keep it interesting, and then that means you have to involve a lot of people, and smaller missions are ideal for that.
And those smaller missions are achieving useful science right now as well, right?
Yes.
What sort of things are they investigating?
It is unbelievable how fast these small miniature payloads develop to do actually really capable science. We have just a satellite in orbit which has been measuring the survival of microbes in a very harsh space environment. We are in 650-kilometer orbit. And we have also tested the degradation of organics, and you can test the degradation of materials, which is very important for science, but also for exploration missions. You can test that, and we are getting data down twice a day on looking at the in situ degradation of organic material, and we can just compare the spectra and look how they degrade under the conditions of radiation and microgravity. In the case for microbes, that's quite important. So it's amazing. There are so many, I cannot all mention all these examples, but for atmosphere science, even pharmaceutical compounds, looking at scientific topics like exoplanets and micrometeor red flags. There are so many satellites out there which are extremely capable of doing good science already, and the field is just growing. The very big advantage is that you have design phase, which is about 2 years, and sometimes shorter, sometimes longer, but still so much beyond any other space mission I've been working for. That I have to say, it was a real pleasure, you know, to do a mission in
just
a short time scale, because if you work for Mars and for Return or so, you can pass your lifetime on that. And I think that is also fun for students, and it is, you have all this development of microtechnology and microelectronics and MEMS in other fields, in earth science and physics, and this is something which is used, and that's why this field is exploding, and it's very interesting, particularly for the young generation.
So what do you think the future holds for space exploration? Is it more small missions? Are we going to get to build back up to the big ones?
I think within a decade, we have still a very, very active program. For instance, every time I look at the charts of NASA about planetary exploration, per se robotic planetary exploration, it's still unbelievably busy. And as you see that data come in, and also from space missions from the rest of the world, which are just incredible, and also from the smaller robotic mission, we get a lot of information and science done. For the flagship mission, the future must be in international cooperation, because we have seen how these large projects, MSL is now extremely successful working on the Martian surface, but it took a long way and delays and additional funding in order to make this mission feasible. And the same happens with very large mission like James Webb Space Telescope. So in order to make that more efficient, and I would say on a faster pace and cheaper, not having extreme delays and adding funding, you have really to work on the large mission, the flagship mission, as we call them, internationally, and try to find a way to work towards common standards and data exploitation. That has to be the future. And any kind of mission which involves human spaceflight beyond the International Space Station have to be done in international cooperation. I don't see any way out. And additionally, you should have a small mission in order to keep the base very, very active. So I don't see any kind of big flagship missions anymore happening without international cooperation in the future. And whereas the small missions can still be done on national level and foster their own capacity of the countries, but also when you look at small missions and small satellites, you have also to look more in the international part, because you need ground station, you need ground stations all over the world. So the movement should really go towards a global exploration program that works on flagship missions and also on the coordination of smaller missions and data worldwide.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a really interesting future. Thank you for coming out and speaking with us.
I thank you.
Listening to Western Worlds on astronomy.fm. Let's go to the discussion. All right, we just listened to an interview with Dr. Pascal Ehrenfreund, and wow, a lot of material covered, a lot of very interesting stuff about the future of science and exploration in space. So to begin with, what do you guys think about the need to involve commercial interests in space exploration?
Yeah, I really like the idea, since there have been so many companies who are really interested in helping the governments do the space exploration. Not only that, they also have their personal benefit to getting, you know, tourists to space and having hotels in space. I've heard so many things about having a tourism industry up there in space. And I think
there needs to be some profit.
Yeah, there needs to be some profit. And I think there's a lot of excitement among people to get into space, whether that be scientists or be normal people.
I think there are some things that commercial interest can be good at. The first steps of exploration into the unknown and a demonstration of new ways of exploring, maybe this is not what they're best for, but where there are places where they can provide services in replacement for government agencies having to do it themselves, there's probably a place for this. We've seen some plans and some steps towards having economic use of things that are already in space, resources on the moon or on asteroids, or other plans for energy and so on. But it'll be a while before we see commercial interests on the surface of other planets, for example.
Yeah. I think to do things with an eye towards not just exploring, but to possibly making some profit, making some money back, it's not necessarily a bad idea, right? It shouldn't be just a black hole of dumping money into. So to actually get something out of it would be good. And then obviously the need to involve commercial interests and possibly many nations is going to be a driving interest going forward.
Yeah, I like when she talks about bringing other developing countries into this idea where you help them in their space program, and later on, these countries are going to help you back, right? Because it's all going to be with the help of each other. It's not just going to be NASA. It's not just going to be ESA anymore. It's probably, in long run, if you're looking to send humans to, you know, Mars or some asteroid to go dig up stuff, I'm sure it's going to be with the help of a lot of people, and obviously from all different countries.
And it's very telling that, as she mentioned, a lot of the smaller countries or developing countries, they want to be doing this. They want into space. So when some of the larger countries are like, oh, I don't know, do we really want to bother with, how much money do we really want to put into this or something? Well, the smaller countries, they want in and they want to do this and they're driven to do it. So that's great to get that motivation.
I think there's a tremendous value in diversity in the space sector. If you're trying to build a mature and robust space sector and space program, then having a diversity of players, small countries, big countries, countries with a comprehensive program, countries with niche capabilities, but then also commercial participation, academic involvement. That diversity helps to cover gaps where one type of player doesn't do very well or has to step back for a time.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of programs get canceled or cut back lately. So, yeah, any individual country is going to struggle at times with fielding a large mission or even a small or medium mission. So the idea of having many working together and picking up each other's slack, it's more complicated for sure, because any one of them that has a problem, that'll have effects on all the others' interests. But hopefully it means that we can just get more done.
I think we're just starting to see commercialization of space technology. For example, Virgin Galactic, they already have their spacecraft tested, and they already taken many pre-order already from people who have money, which they have to pay $200,000. And also for SpaceX, they're already helping NASA doing the shuttling of cargoes for the ISS.
Yeah, they have a lot of contracts, SpaceX.
Yeah,
so it's just building up for them.
Maybe in the 20 years, we will start to see a lot more private space companies being started up.
And this will mean that the things that we can do in space are just going to be diversified as well. So we'll be able to send tourists, we'll possibly have floating hotels or exploration capabilities that are enhanced.
Also with the benefits commercial, the technology is being developed faster. Rather with government, you have to wait for the grants to get approved. Yeah, with private, if you have more people working on it, the technology will also develop faster, I think.
There's an interaction between the two, right? Because you have SpaceX, you know, they're seen as this private entity, but of course their contracts are largely from NASA and from government bodies. They just want another pair of contracts from the U.S. Air Force.
Yeah.
To develop the cargo service of the space station, they won a bunch of NASA contracts on the strength of their existing technology development, and then leverage that to get more investment. So there's an important role for government, even in private development.
And government will continue to have to play a role. After all, someone's going to have to organize this, keep it all going, and also ensure that some science is getting done.
Yeah, yeah. And if we imagine this flourishing of commercial space and all of these buses full of tourists flying to orbit, someone is going to have to provide space traffic control.
And the research to ensure that we know how to do it properly. Mm-hmm. Ongoing research will be an important part of even any commercial endeavor.
Yeah.
And I really like when Pascal talks about it's easy to get involved grad students in smaller missions and, you know, helping them get the understanding of how the bigger missions work. I think it's very important for everyone, even on a smaller level, to get the experience going ahead. These people are going to be the people who are going to be working as the traffic controllers when we plan to go to space, let's say 20 years from now. So I think getting them the experience, hands-on experience, is the key to, you know, getting the seed in them to actually go ahead work.
Yeah, that's one of the nice things about the smaller projects is you can have a lot of them. You can involve a lot of people. It doesn't necessarily have to be researchers even. Some of these projects, I think, involve high school students, lots and lots of university students. That's a lot of people who can be motivated and involved and then hopefully stay in it and drive what's coming for us.
You know, all of this talk about building a space sector and building up exploration capability, it seems for Dr. Ehrenfreund, the goal is nonetheless at the end of it all to do some science. And it's nice to hear the diversity of things that are still to learn out there in the solar system, nearby and farther away.
Yeah, by small missions, large missions, and by countries all over the world.
That's our show for this week. Our host over the previous two seasons and founder and creator of Western Worlds, Dr. John Moores, has moved to York University in Toronto. We would like to thank him for all his hard work developing the show and training the rest of us. We wish him all the best. Our hosts in this season and in coming seasons will be rotating. Western Worlds is a co-production of the Center for Planetary Science and Exploration and Astronomy.fm. This episode was produced by Parshati Patel and Michael Forrester. Our roundtable discussion featured co-hosts Raymond Francis, Dave Kirsch, and Parshati Patel. Our theme music is Heliosheath by Sean Kim. Today's show was hosted, edited, and featured an interview by myself, Dave Kirsch. You can continue the conversation online and listen to past episodes or learn more about Western Worlds by visiting our website, www.cpsx.uwo.ca/westernworlds. You can also email us at westernworlds.uwo.ca. On Twitter, we are at WWAFM, and on Facebook, we are Western-Worlds. On behalf of everyone here at Western Worlds, I'd like to thank you for joining us tonight. I hope you can join us again next week, right here on astronomy.fm.